Hi, everybody. Just one quick announcement. I did have a little trouble with the podcast last time, where in the middle of the lecture, it cut out. I caught it right away and started it up again, but the podcast was in two pieces. And I couldn't figure out how to stick them together. I know they're just bits. I know that I should just be able to stick them together, but I couldn't figure out how to stick them together. So I did eventually figure out something, but now last class's podcast is in a slightly different audio format than the previous ones, which I'm thinking shouldn't bother you. But I haven't put it up on the website yet. That's the next step. But if you have some reason to think that .wma files work for you and .mp4a files don't, let me know. Otherwise, I don't know how to convert to the other one. All right. Let's see. The other thing that struck me is I was watching TV, and there was a nice example of recursion going on. Oh, screen lit out. See if I can get this to work.
Everyone has something priceless to share.
That's just a commercial.
Or Pickwick.
Pay no attention to
Pickwick.com.
Stephen Colbert. He does this a lot. I don't know if you noticed. If
anybody
watches
the
show.
I'm not a big fan of sleep. It's just 8 hours of laying around doing nothing. Plus, it's boring. How many dreams of eating?
There's a picture of him in the studio. Of him in front of a picture of him in front of a picture of him.
I expect the sit-through brain.
Seriously.
The only reason I even go to bed is so I can wake up to the friendly friends of...
The web, the internet connection is not great at the moment.
Corporate Fox and Friends, who yesterday responded to my response to their response to Barack Obama's response to questions of why he doesn't.
So that's recursion right there, right?
In fact, he's got this nice. To my response.
There it is. So this, what we're looking at right now, is a scene from another show called Fox and Friends, being the background in one of Stephen Colbert's reports, which is then being shown in Fox and Friends. You see the little Fox logo outside of his thing? They literally showed that on their show. So, of course, on his show, he showed that. So now we're, if you include me, we're five levels in here, right? It's me showing you what Stephen Colbert showed that the Fox people showed that Stephen Colbert showed that the Fox people showed. So there's one other thing he does in the middle of this. Actually, it's towards the end of it. He keeps referring to one of the guys on that show as the brown-haired guy who's not Steve Doocy. That's what he calls him. And apparently, in the Fox and Friends show, they heard him say that, and they said, "But my hair is not even brown; it's black." So he ends up by the end. Well, okay, I don't think this is going to happen fast enough.
That's all right.
But by the end, he's calling this guy the... He might even be the bald guy who is not the black-haired guy, who is not the brown-haired guy, who is Steve Doocy. Which, again, has this sort of element of you can just keep nesting this arbitrarily. Which I thought was funny, but apparently that's just me. All right, moving on. All right, so last time we talked about this idea of which models of computation are more powerful than others. So here's a little hypothetical question. This is not true. Thank you. Alright, I think things are winding down. Another 5 seconds. Go to 1:15. 2:1, stop it. So there's sort of a run on B there for a while. So A actually was up to 70% at one point, but it seemed to come down. So all right. So what are we saying? So I said that I've got a new computational model called Sniff, based on musical. It seemed to go with Scratch somehow. I don't know exactly why. I figured out how to use it to do anything that can be done in Scratch. So anything done in Scratch, I can also do in Sniff. What we don't know from what I said is whether there are things in Sniff that we can't do in Scratch. We don't know. All we know is that anything you can do in Scratch, you can do in Sniff. So Sniff has to be at least as powerful as Scratch, maybe more so. So that's A. So it doesn't say anything about how powerful it is, like whether Scratch is as powerful as Sniff. It doesn't say that they're equally powerful, though they probably are because all models of computation seem to be the same, but we don't know that from what I said. Yeah?
So powerful has something to do with, say, how efficiently or how quickly a computation can be formed on one model rather than another, just as long as it can.
Did you like D? Is that what you're saying?
No, just that.
Okay. So powerful, just the word powerful is not actually a technical word. So we'd have to be much more precise to distinguish. But you're right, in some cases, we're ignoring how fast things happen. The question is, can it be computed at all? Another level of question is, which one can compute something faster than another in fewer steps? Or more practical, sure. Or just easier to express yourself. So sometimes people will use powerful to mean, you know, powerful language is one where you can do what you have to do in the smallest number of things you have to type. But that's not what I'm talking about here. Or last class. What I was talking about is which ones can do things that the other one just can't do at all. And in this case, that's all we would know from this is A. That in this notion of power that just says can you do it versus can you not do it, all we know is that everything you can do in Scratch, you could do in Sniff. So one is at least as big as the other. Moving on. So, okay, we can apply the same idea to people, and philosophers actually do that. So, what is true about what we know about the relative power and this power of something possible versus impossible? What do we know about the relative power between computers and people? It's nice to have some questions where you don't actually have to write anything down. Or if you're writing something down, I don't know how that's helping. Draw a little brain, draw wires coming out of it. Another 10 seconds. 5, 3, 2, 1, okay, stop. All right, so majority answer seems to be B. What are some things that people can do that computers can't do that are possible for computers? Up in the corner?
Think.
Okay, all right. Yeah, go ahead. Okay, all right. That came up last time. Yeah?
Feel.
Okay.
Give birth.
That's true. I sort of wasn't thinking along those, on the lines of physical lines, you know, like, you know, swim the 100 meter dash or something. Blunk. Computers are not as smart as people. Look. Yeah, that's true. I meant sort of in the mental domain. Fair enough. Any other thoughts?
So I disagree with all those except for the giving birth, which I have to grant because I'm pretty sure that's impossible. But is it impossible for computers to think? I don't think we know that. I don't think we've yet shown that it's impossible for computers to think. In fact, kind of my career depends on the possibility that it would be true, because you know it would be silly to be an artificial intelligence otherwise. But it's not like we know. It's not like we know they can think. It sort of maybe depends on what you mean by think. Feel is actually, I like that one a lot, because a lot of what I do in what my group concentrates on is, what if they could feel? What if they could feel happy and sad? How can you use that idea to let them be better at things? You know, try to, if they're sad, they should try to make themselves happy in some way, right? And so we get to, the sort of sicko thing is, we get to define happy and sad for the computer, and so we can make it suffer until it does what we want. So it has this sort of strange overlord kind of feel to it. But nevertheless, you can sort of call what they're doing feeling. It's very, very primitive at this point. But that is the direction that we're trying to go with it. Yeah?
On the last slide, when you referred to computation,
yes.
What would be an example of, say, a computation?
Right. So a simple example might be something like converting Fahrenheit to Celsius, right? Like you get a number comes in and you do something to it and a number goes out, and the number that comes out should have some relationship to the one that goes in.
So do we have manipulating data?
Yeah, so mostly computation involves there's some kind of input, there's some process, and there's something that comes out the other side. And we want that thing that comes out to have some particular relationship to what goes in. So you can think of it as being a function, something that's what mathematical functions do. They take inputs, they do something, and they produce outputs. So yeah, we'll talk about a very concrete example that's interesting because no computer can solve it. Not today, but next time. But it's true, it does seem sort of funny for me to introduce to you, here's a problem that no computer can solve, before I've really told you what a problem is. What are we talking about? And basically that is what we're talking about. A process that takes some information, some input information, and then produces some output information that has a certain property. So computing the square root of something, given a word, finding a rhyming word for it, given an empty Sudoku puzzle, filling it in with the solution, things like that. And most problems that computers work on, you can phrase them one way or another as an input-output kind of relation. Filling a region, right? So the example that I showed in the movie or the song last time was, given the picture, we click, and then what it needs to compute is figuring out what's inside the region and color that blue and leave everything else not blue. So it has to do a computation, has to do some kind of thinking-like work to get the job done. That's a yes. Good question. So what I was going for, what I think in this case is C. We don't, nobody, no philosopher or computer scientist or anybody has sat down and said, here's the thing that computers, it's just impossible for them to do. Therefore, the human mind is more powerful than a computer. Nobody, it may very well be true, but no one has proven it that way yet. No one has proven it by saying, here's something that people can do that no computer can do. There have been attempts, but none of them are really very convincing. All right, so that was from the discussion from last time. I found this quote, so I thought it would be fun to make a quick impression. So this is from 1733. So when was U.S. founded? 1776. So this is like pre-U.S., let alone computers. Jonathan Swift, the guy who wrote Gulliver's Travels and some other very clever stuff, he said, so naturalists observe, a flea hath smaller fleas that on him prey, and these have smaller fleas to bite him, and so on, and so proceed ad infinitum. Which probably was all just an excuse to ad infinitum and bite him, but nevertheless, it has been used as an example of which of these. This has any effect on anything, yeah. Like, in principle, this hasn't changed anything, but I wonder if anyone's mind has changed as a result of seeing this picture. Certainly the B, C, and D people are feeling a little uncomfortable. What's that?
So, or some one person is just funny.
Oh, yeah, I guess you can just mess around at some point. Like, make the bars dance. I shouldn't have done that. Dun, 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 dun. All right, I'm going to be stopping shortly. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, everybody stop. All right, so I agree with recursion. I do think this is an example of recursion, but it's an example of all the other things, too. In fact, the place that I found it was actually a website about fractals. So somebody on the web thought that it was really, you know, just the perfect thing to say about fractals. But anyway, all these things are really very, very closely related. This idea that you can express a larger thing in terms of the same thing, only down a scale. And it could be down a scale in terms of physical size, like in the Flea case, but it could also be down a scale in terms of, I don't know, time, any of a number of possibilities, I guess. I guess in all these examples, it's more about space than anything else. All right. That's it. So, let those examples would be more fun. Alas, one learns. All right, so, I bet you didn't see this coming, but today I'm going to talk about the elements of surprise. Now, mostly I'm going to talk about probability theory, a little bit of stuff just to give you some intuitions about how probabilities work. It turns out that some people have gotten a lot of leverage by writing programs that actually do random things inside them, and that these programs are not necessarily more powerful in the sense that we were just talking about, but they do seem to solve some problems faster than if they weren't allowed to be random, which is sort of a very weird thing. But to appreciate why that's true, it would help if you had a little bit more background about the kinds of probability theory that comes up in understanding these kinds of algorithms. So that's mostly what I'm going to do, is just kind of take you a step through this. And I think the way I'd like to do it is once I put up some equations and some examples on the slides, we'll switch into Scratch and we'll write some programs to actually kind of try some of this stuff out and see what happens if we flip this kind of coin in this kind of pattern. Or maybe I'll start with that, since the first example kind of goes right to it. So let's see how I can do this. Oh yeah, I forgot that Scratch is a little bit irritating because it doesn't fit on the screen. First it does a little graphical effect, then it waits a small amount of time, and then undoes the graphical effect. But then it has a variable called coin, and it's set to a random number, either 1 or 2. All right? And so that's what we're going to be talking about, is about what if you have something, a statement in a programming language that can pick a random number. Actually, I like 0 or 1 better. Let me actually change that. 0 or 1. So 0 or 1, in other words, a random bit. Okay? So you can flip a coin and get a random bit. In this case, after that coin is set, it says, if the value of that coin is 0, then it shows you the head of the coin, and otherwise, it shows you the back of the coin, the tail. All right? So each time you click on this, it goes, and it's either heads or tails. Sometimes it stays the same, sometimes it flips to the other one, it's random, it's a coin flip. All right, so here's Yeah, is that a question?
How does it like go about doing it? Is it like running a number and then like stopping at one or?
So a little bit later in the lecture, we'll say how it can magically do that, because it's just a computer, and it doesn't have a little coin flipper inside of it. Though I've heard people mention maybe building computers that way. But it turns out there's a way of getting it to do numbers that aren't really random, but are as good as anything that you could find. So, but for the moment, let's just say it's a statement in the language. Whenever you want, you can have it pick a random number, 0 or 1. Pick a random bit, equal probability of 0 or 1. Now, how would you use this, for example, to pick a random number, either 10 or 11? Right? So this is a reduction question. Let's see if I can. It's not meant to be hard, but it's trying to get us in the mood of how we're going to, the kind of problems we're going to solve today. So this, maybe we'll get make a variable. Okay, we already have such a variable. All right, so you see up here there's this variable A. So if we click on this statement, it will assign A either 0 or 1. Each time we click on it, it'll pick either 0 or 1. So you can see it changing up in the corner there. Now what if we wanted, each time we clicked on that, it either would be 10 or 11? How could we get it to do that? Yeah?
If it comes out to be 0, then it'll be 10. If it comes out to be 11, then...
Good, all right, so let's... Great, let's write that code really fast. So we stick a little if else here. We need to do a comparison. So if our little random number that we pick is 0, then set A to be... Oh, how convenient. Okay, it was already 10. Good. And otherwise, we set it to 11. All right, everybody on board with that? Anyone think that's not going to work? Let's see what happens. 10, 10, 11, 11, 10, 10, 11, 11, 10, 11. There we go, all right. 10, 11. All right, so that seems to be doing what we wanted to. Can anybody see a way of shrinking this little program and not using an if statement? Can you do it a little bit more directly? So pick random 0 to 1 is a number. It's either 0 or 1. But we'd like A to be a number, either 10 or 11. So can you see how to take... This works, but there's a slightly more succinct way of doing the same thing. Anybody suggest how we might do it in one statement? Oh, good. I'm glad I asked this then. Is that a thought or just an elbow? It's part. Right, so it turns out in Scratch you can say that, but we're going to pretend for a little while that Scratch doesn't do that. All it can do is pick a 0 or a 1. Yeah?
Add 10 to whatever number it should
be. 10. Yes, that's what I was thinking. So this works, but another way we could get the same effect in one statement is if we do this. We set A. Oh, that's not quite right. So that'll just set A to 10, or sorry, to 0 or 1. What we really want to do, drag in our little plus guy. Okay. 11, 11, 11, 11, 10, there we go. 11, 11, 11, 11. One thing about writing programs that have randomness in them is sometimes they're really hard to test, because they don't always do the same thing. But anyway, yeah, so do you see what this is doing here? First, it picks a random bit, 0 or 1, and whichever one it is, it adds 10 to that. Well, if it were a 0, adding 10 would make the answer 10. If it were 1, then adding 10 would make it 11. So in either case, this statement here either comes to be 10 or 11, and then we assign that value to A. All right, does that make sense to folks? So let's to make sure that it does, what about, think through what would happen if we wanted the answer to either be 10 or 20? How could we get it so that we have just a little statement here that's just picking a number 0 or 1, flipping a Bitcoin, but then we want it to either be a 10 or a 20? So hold on to that. So you did a fine job a moment ago. Anyone else can think it through? What do you got?
Could you do more than one, like a dish? Like, can you do
we could. Alright, that's a great idea. Let's try that. I would like this Dr. Dewey stuff to be out of my way, though. Okay. Alright, so, stepping through, what should we do? Make a copy of this, maybe? Like that?
Nah, that's wrong.
Don't! Explain how you know you're wrong.
Because it would be 11, not 10. It would be 11, or it's 1, not 10.
11 or 20, that's close.
If you multiply by 10, then it is.
Ah, multiply. So, okay, let's take me through. So tell me the broken thing, and maybe we can fix it. So we pick a random number, either 0 or 1.
Or it would be 10 or 21, excuse me.
Okay, so we pick a random number, 0 or 1, we multiply that by 10. Yeah. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's wrong.
No, it's okay. But sometimes wrong actually gives us insight into how to do it right. So we're going to multiply that by 10.
Yeah.
Now, what is this going to give us? Either 0 or
10.
10. Right.
Add 10 up to it.
What's that?
Add 10 up to it.
If we add 10 to this,
we can get 0 and multiply by 10. And add 10, we get 10. We get 1 and multiply by 10, we get 10. Add 10, we get 20. So that will work.
Maybe I just can't add.
No, but you get the right answer and then you talk yourself out of it. But look, it's doing the right thing. You see it? And so what is it doing? It's taking the bit, it's multiplying it by 10, and now we have either 0 or 10. We add 10 to that, and we get either 10 or 20. So it did the right thing. And we can make this more complicated, but I think we're running out of steam on this particular example. All right. But I was hoping that would sort of warm people up. And I can see there's some people who are warmed up and other people who are hiding. And so... What's coming next will seem more complicated if you don't get this part of it. So, what can I say to help you get this part of it? Or is it's obvious once somebody else says it, but maybe hard to come up with on your own?
Can you do another example?
Another example, sure. How about like 0 or 2? How would we get that? So, we flip our... So, I mean, one way to do that, if you want to do these in your head, or whatever, if you want to do these on paper, you find too hard to do in your head. So like this. So here's our random, the output of random. It's either 0 or 1. But what we'd like it to be is either 0 or 2. So we need to find something that we can do to the answer. So that in the 0 case, the answer will be 0, but in the 1 case, the answer will be 2. Now, an if statement is a very literal, direct way of doing this, right? We could just say, well, if the random thing is 0, then make the answer 0. If the random thing is 1, then make the answer 2. And that's fine. Sometimes it becomes hard to make this sort of thing scale, because it gets more complicated as you get more choices. But that works, and I don't want to try to talk you out of that kind of plan. But it turns out, in this case, you can do it really directly.
Yeah, multiply by 2.
Multiply by 2. So if we take rand, whatever comes out of rand, and we multiply it by 2, then in the 0 case, it's 0. In the 1 case, it's 2, which is exactly what we wanted. Okay? All right, we've won one person over. Anyone else ready to do one over? Excellent. Okay. So here's the next game. Here's the next thing we want to do. We would like either. So coin flips are good if you're, flip a coin. Who gets to receive the ball first or something like that. But there's some games, like Dreidel, if you've ever played Dreidel, where you need a random number generator that gives you one of four possible choices. Let's call them, for sake of not speaking Hebrew at the moment, 0, 1, 2, and 3. Okay. So we would like to use our little random number generator thing, this rand, or pick random 0 to 1, so that it can actually give us four different possibilities. So how can we do that in the if way first? Let's think that through in the if way. So we have something that whenever it needs to, it can flip a coin. But when all is said and done, it needs to have selected among four different choices with equal probability.
What do you think?
Flip the coin twice.
Flip the coin twice.
It's a 0 and a 1. Give it a value of 1 or some other combination.
There are other choices too. 0, 0, 1, 0, and 1, 1. Not quite sure why we did it in that order, but anyway, there's you flip two coins, there's four possibilities, they're all equally likely, and for each of those combinations, we just assign it one of the numbers. 1, 0, 2, and 3. Right? Or I can maybe do this. Shin, hey, gimel, nun, if you're playing Drake. I was afraid I wouldn't be able to do that. Alright? So right, and so we can say that in Scratch, right? How would we say this in Scratch? We need maybe an if statement inside of another if statement. Something like if we pick a random number and it's 0, then what do? Then we're going to pick another random number. Oh, actually, I guess there's two different ways we could do this. Okay. We pick a random number. If it's 0, then we pick another random number. Mm. Oh, darn it. If that one also is 0, then we set A to be 0. Otherwise, if the first coin is a 0 and the second coin is a 1, we'll set A to 1. Otherwise, if the first coin is a 1, then we'll flip a different second coin. If that one's a 0, then we set A to 2. And if it's a 1, then we set it to 4. All right, let's see if this works. 1, 4, 2. Oh, wait, 3, not 4. Can't follow my instructions. All right, 0, 2, 3, 0, 2. 0, 2, 0, 3. Is that everything? Have we seen 1 yet?
No.
3, 1. Okay, all right. We seem to get everybody. And if, what would be nice is if we could let this run, say, 100 times, see how many times we get each of them, see if they're roughly the same. We could do that, I think, but I don't feel like it at the moment. All right, but if people kind of on board with this, if we now flip two coins. And, well, two coins in this case and the different two coins in the other case, but then we get one of four possibilities with equal probability. I think you also need to be able to flip between four things if you're playing Twister. Is that true? Yellow, red, green, blue? Or is there another, more colors? Anybody play Twister recently? Nobody, have no idea what I'm talking about?
And then all right. Flip your heads.
Yeah, and then do you flip something separate for that? The spinner doesn't just choose the color, it spins. Chooses the color and the hand,
yeah,
or whatever, bot the limb.
Yeah. It's often divided into four sections.
Right.
And like foot, left foot, right foot, left hand, right hand, that type section.
But then, and a separate one for color?
No, the colors are there, but in little spots.
So it's divided into 16 then?
Technically, yes.
Okay, so there's four different appendages.
Yes.
And each of those could have four different colors.
Yes.
Good. All right. Now, what if we wanted to do that? Let's do this. Here we go. I think we can do this. All right, so if we make a when I receive spinner, oh my, spinner, it's going to set A to one of four possible values. All right, so here's, what are we going to do with this? We're going to, okay. I think we can do this. So we'll say oh. Let me try this again. What I'd like it to do is do a little program that does the spinner for Twister. So here's what it's going to do. It's going to, first, it's going to use the spinner subroutine to set A to be either 0, 1, 2, or 3. Then, if the spinner comes back, A comes back with value 0, then we'll say right hand. On the other hand, if the spinner comes back 1, we'll say left hand. Maybe I should just call it left hand. There we go, right hand. If the spinner comes back with a 2, then we'll say right foot. And if the spinner comes back with a 3, we'll say left foot. So now we should at least, who's going to say it? Saka Duide? I don't see anybody talking. Who's talking? Say right hand. Oh, there she goes. It's here. But we have to get the color too, right? So how can we do the color? What if, when we're finished with that, we'll spin the spinner again. And now, if A comes up 0, we'll say, help me out.
Red.
That sounds good. Red. If it comes up 1, blumple? What?
Blue.
Blue, okay, yeah. Blumple's not a color. Alright, then green. I'm having trouble erasing these. Green.
Yellow.
And yellow. Alright. Here we go. Saka Duide, do your worst. Left foot, blue. Left foot, that's good. Red, there we go. Right hand, yellow. This could be a lot of fun at a party. Oh, we could actually make it spin. But anyway, that's project for another day. All right, so now we're uniformly at random choosing among 16 possibilities. Combination of right and left, hand and foot, and one of the four colors. 16 possibilities. Woo-hoo. And we can just keep doing this. The more, and how many flips did we use to do this? 4. Why 4? Well, the first one can be either 0 or 1. The second one can either be 0 or 1. The third one can be either 0 or 1. The fourth one can be either 0 or 1. How many combinations of 0 and 1s are there? 2 times 2 times 2 times 2. 2 to the fourth is 16. That chooses the 16 possibilities with equal probability. All right? So what other numbers could we do really easily this way? If we wanted to choose a number 0 to what? What else would be easy? We did 2, flip the coin. There's 2 possibilities. We did the dreidel. That was 4. We did twister. That was 16. What else can we do really easily? What if we flip the coin 5 times? How many choices would we generate? What? 32. All right, 2 to the fifth. All right, so this is good. There's one other thing I could show you with regard to this. It's not so important, but there's a little trickiness if one was being tricky and little. Why don't I get over here anymore? There's a way to do this without the if statements. If we take the first bit and we multiply it by 2 and we add it to the second bit, what happens? So we flip the coin once and we get either a 0 or a 1. And we flip the coin a second time, we get either a 0 or a 1. If we take 2 times this guy plus this guy, what do we get? Well, 2 times 0 plus 1 is 1. 2 times 0 plus 0 is 0. 2 times 1 plus 0 is 2, and 2 times 1 plus 1 is 3. Right? So I wasn't actually being completely arbitrary. What is this mapping?
What's the relationship between this and that? It's binary, right? You can think of each of the bits as being one of the binary digits in the number, and then you can just translate it to decimal by taking 2 times this one plus this one. And if we had 3 bits, it would be 4 times this guy plus 4 times 2 times this guy plus this guy, and so on. So it's easy to get a random decimal number as long as it's a power of 2. So the next thing, the next trick, for those of you I haven't completely lost yet, is what do we do if we're trying to choose a number 0, 1, or 2? So there's 3 possibilities. Alright, we'll start from scratch. So we would like to choose 0, 1, and 2 with all with equal probability. So how can we do that? How many coin flips do you think we need? We've only got coins, yeah.
What if you flip one coin once?
Okay.
And then use the value, whether it's 0 or 1, to determine the first time, and then the second time you flip it, you add that value plus the previous value.
Okay. So let's
so
kind of...
It would be 3, but not the first try.
Let's write this down kind of as a tree. So we've got the first time we flip a coin, it comes up with either 0 or 1. So what are you suggesting we do? Now what do we do with that 0? Okay, so second time, we get either 0 or 1, and so you're saying here we want the final answer to be 0, here we want the final answer to be 1.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And what happens if on the first flip we got a 1?
You can add either 0 or 1 to it.
Okay, so then we do a second flip. It can be either a 0 or 1. If we add that to this guy, then we either get 1 or 2, so there, we either get a 0, 1, or 2, yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't that mean you get 1 more often than 0 or 2?
How much more often?
Twice as much.
About twice as often. So what's happening is we're equally likely to go down either of these branches, and we're equally likely to go down either of these branches. So, what fraction of the time are we going to get a 0 at? Like 25%? A quarter? What fraction of the time are we going to get the 2 at? Quarter? So, this one will come out a quarter, which is good. It's the same as the other two. But a quarter of the time we'll also get this one out. And so, really, we'll see a 1 half the time, and something else a quarter of the time. So we do get the 3 choices that we wanted, but we didn't quite get them to balance the way we were hoping. All right, with me? So this is what I expected to be the first guess, so thank you for putting it in. But we're gonna have to refine this idea. Something's not quite right, because they didn't all end up being equal. And in fact, if we programmed it in and ran it 100 times or something like that, what we'd see is a whole lot more ones than zeros or twos. Now we can make it, oh, it's not the ones, we want more twos than the other, we can always do this, right? But that doesn't actually fix the problem. That just means now we get twice as many twos as everything else. So, any partial thoughts? Yeah?
If you make it so that when A equals 1 on the first flip,
yes,
you get 2, and then A equals 0, you do a second flip.
Okay.
That would fix.
Okay, let's try that. So here, if we on the first flip, if we get the 2, then we're done. But on the first flip, we get a 0, then we need to flip again and get the 0 or the 1, right? Okay, so how often do we get the 0? Well, half the time we go down this branch, and then half the time we go down this branch, and this is a quarter. Half the time we go down this branch, and half the time we go down this branch, and this is also a quarter. And half the time we go down this branch,
and we get a half. Oh, it really didn't change anything. We still are way overweighted on the twos. Sure, take another whack.
Well, maybe you'd have to have another coin involved, but I don't know. If you flip a third coin and then either add 0 or 1 to a 1 after a second coin, then you would maybe increase.
What about that? Now a quarter of the time it's 0, a quarter of the time it's 1, and a quarter of the time it's 2. They're all the same.
How did you get
2? How did I get what?
2.
It's 2? Oh, this all this tree means is I flip a coin once, if it comes up 1, then I flip a coin a second time. If it comes up 0, I'll say that the final answer is a 2. I'm good with that. What's the problem? First, before we fix it, first, what's the problem?
Cheating.
How am I cheating?
What happens
if the first coin comes up 1 and then the second coin comes up 1? I don't know, it doesn't seem possible because I'm blocking it. But it could. And in fact, a quarter of the time, that's what will happen. It'll come down here and then there's like, I don't know, the trash can from hell or something like that. And, something horrible happens. So that's not good.
So I guess if it adds another thing above.
Oh, what kind of thing in the blob would be good to have here?
3 or something?
Well, what do we want to do in this case? And if it came out of a 0 in this case, and a 1 in this case, and a 2 in this case, what should come out in this case? If it's any one of those alone, then it's going to be too much weight on that.
You have to add a whole new variable?
Possibly. Did you have a thought?
If you said it equals a 3, and then you say whenever a equals 3, again.
Do you see how he just busted out of the box? Here's what he said. It's not that when we go down this branch, it becomes me, as much as that made me happy. In fact, really what we'd like to have happen is that'll be try again. You know, either get a 0 or 1 or a 2 or, you ever play with those magic 8-balls? Like, try again later, right? Let's go through this process again. Why would this work? Well, what's going to happen is if it gives an answer, the answer that it gives, all possible answers are equally likely. There's no more twos than zeros or ones. It just doesn't always give an answer, right? It may say, answer cloudy, try again later, and it comes back up to the top of the tree. So we can actually use, I like the way you said it in terms of what if it comes up a 3. That's not how I was thinking about it, but that actually fits really well with this program. So let's get rid of our little spinner here for a moment. We go back. We've got, we still have the subroutine. What the subroutine does is whenever we call the subroutine, it sets A to be either 0, 1, 2, or 3. So, here's what we're going to do. Yeah, okay, so let's think about, let's do that first. Okay. So, here's what we'll do. We'll flip our little friendly coin, or little spinner. So we'll do spinner. There we go. All right. Then we say, the variable A is either going to be 0, 1, 2, or 3. And what we're saying is, if A is 3, then we're going to need to spin again. Hang on one second. And just for clarity, let's do one other thing. We're going to start off A as 10,000. Just to make it obvious what's going on. All right, so I didn't tell what to do. We do the spinner again. All right, so here's what this is going to do. Turns out A is some garbage number. Then it's going to run the spinner, make A be either 0, 1, 2, or 3. If A is 3, it's going to do the spinner again because that trial got thrown away. All right, so let's see what this does now. We get 3. 2, 0, oh wait, 3, we shouldn't have gotten a 3, why did we get 3, what's that, how can we get 3, we said if it's 3, we don't want it to do it,
that's not a,
It's not a what gate?
It's not an if, then gate. If?
Yeah, if A is 3, then it does the thing inside the little cup. Right? How could this possibly output a 3?
It's spinning 3 again.
Ah, so the first time it's either 0, 1, 2, or 3. But if it's a 3, then we say, no, try again. So it does it again, and it's either 0, 1, 2, or 3. So it should very rarely be a 3. The only way it could be a 3 is if it came out of 3 both times. But it can come out of 3 both times. And then we end up with, so what are the probabilities here? We get 1/16th of the time it'll come up 3. Is that right? And otherwise, it's equally split among 0, 1, and 2. Yeah. But that's not quite what we wanted. We didn't want 3s. So maybe this wasn't really the plan. Did you have a different plan in mind?
Yeah, you need to use a while
loop. A while loop. Brilliant. Brilliant. So what does a while loop tell you to do that's different from this?
It tells you to keep on looping.
Keep on looping.
You get whatever you want.
Great. So here's what we're going to do. We do our spinner. Wait, right. We want to repeat until A, we'll say if A is less than 3. Right? Once it's less than 3, we know we're good. Almost threw the whole thing away. All right, let's just read what we've got here. Spin the spinner. And until it's the case that the value of the spinner is less than 3, not 3, then spin again. Just keep spinning again. How long can this run? What's the longest this could possibly run? Twice? 3 times? Infinity times? Could it run infinity times? So there's 2 questions. What's, go ahead.
Depends on the problem.
Well, we know the it's a quarter. Sorry.
Very small chance.
It's very small, it turns out to be 0 chance that it will run forever. But it's really unlikely. It's 0 probability. It sort of can't happen yet. There's no number of times it can go around. No matter how many times you think it can go around, it could go around a little longer than that. So it's unbounded, the number of times it might go around. But the longer the run is, the less likely it is to happen. I'd like to look at how many times it's going to have to go around. But first, let's make sure that this actually works. So watch our A variable. 0, 0, 1, 2, 0. 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 2. We're getting them with equal probability. I don't know if you're noticing, if you watch the box really closely, can you see that it's...
Yeah,
occasionally it's setting it to 3, and then the loop is continuing. It's like, no, not 3. Let me try again. Oh, no, still not 3. Okay, good. Now we got something. So you can, I didn't think it would be visible, but it really is. You can actually see it briefly. Try 3 and then overwrite it with something else. But it won't stop until it's not 3. So it can't possibly be done until this becomes something other than 3. And in fact, the likelihood of 0, 1, and 2 turn out to be a third, a third, a third. Right? Even though all the probabilities that we can get out of something like this look like they're all quarter, 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 you actually get completely equal probabilities on all of them, which is very neat. All right, so Any comments or questions on this? We see sort of how we got to this point. We could do 0, 1, and 2. In fact, now we can flip a coin and make it come out to be any range of numbers that we want, as long as we're willing to throw away. You know, flip a coin, if it's not one of the ones that we want, we throw it away and try again. So long as we do that, this is going to work. Now the question is, on average, how many times is it going to have to go around this loop? Okay? Let's actually do a little experiment. So we'll make a variable called count. Do we have a called count? No. Make a variable called count. Oh, make a variable count for count. And we'll start it off at 0. And we'll change count by 1. So every time we go, maybe each time we do the spin, we'll count the number of spins. All right, so let's look at what this is saying here. We spin the spinner, we set count to 1, because we spun it once. Now, as long as the value of the spinner was less than 3, if it ever, until it becomes less than 3, as long as it's 3, spin it again. Spin it again and add 1 to the count. So each time we spin it, we bump the count up by 1. When it's finally finished, we'll see the variable count will tell us how many times we went around. So let's try this out. So we click on it. It took 1 random try. 1 random try. 2 random tries. 1 random try. 1 random try. 1 random try. 1 random try. 2 random tries. So what can we do? We'd like to kind of average these together. So here's what I'm going to suggest. We're going to stick a loop around this. We're going to do the experiment. How many times do you think we should do this experiment to get some good data? Twice? 3 times? 100 times? 1,000 times? 10? I guess 10 is already in there. You can do 10. It's a computer, so we can actually do a whole lot more than that. Get in there. Get in my bed. There we go. All right. And so what we're going to do is we're going to make a variable called total that we're going to start out at 0. So, alright, so we start total at 0, and we're going to increase total, change total. Each time we finish this one of these experiments, we're going to add count to it. Then, maybe we can say, how do we get the average now? We added up, so each time, the first time it takes 1, the second time it takes 1, so we're adding all those 1s and 2s and 3s and stuff together in a variable called total. But now we want to know, what's the average?
Divide count by total.
Divide count by, count is just this sort of temporary thing. We divide count by something. How many things are we adding together here? I think I heard it under some of these graphs over here. A little louder. 10. All right, let's see. 0.1. So that seems fundamentally wrong. What did I do wrong?
Divide total by 10.
Thank you. Yes, that made no sense. Total. I love bugs. All right, 1.3. 1.4. 1.5, 1.3. All right, let's, it's a computer, right? I mean, we shouldn't have much pity for it. Let's just have to do it 1,000 times. We'll get a more accurate estimate. You can watch all the fun happening in the corner there, right? Each run, count is like 1, 2, or 3, 1, 2, or 3. It's adding up these totals as it goes. I don't know how many it's done so far. How can you tell?
The total.
No, but total is the total of count. How many runs did it take? So it really should be about half that. So it's done about 250. So it's going to take a couple more seconds. But anyway, little Sacagawea and her child are sitting there flipping coins like mad people, and getting us some good statistics. Maybe you shouldn't look yet. Don't look. No, don't look. What should it turn out to be? What's the average number of flips it's going to take before we get the one that we want? Before we get 0, 1, or 2. So here's another way back. Here's a similar question to think about. So imagine that you're married and reproducing, and you want to have a girl baby. All right. And so each time you try, it could be a boy or a girl, equal probability. How many kids on average do you have to have before you get that girl? I hear a 2. Is it 1? You think 1?
That's a
50-50
chance, right?
50-50 chance, right. So the first time you do it, could be a boy, could be a girl. And you're going to keep trying until you get the girl. Even if it takes 33 children. It's just very unlikely that it should take 33 children, right? All right, well, anyway, it's done its thing. It came out, what does that number look like? Actually, it came out beautifully.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's perfect. 1 point, what is that number? I mean, 1.33 is, that's an approximation of an exact number. What do you think the exact number is? It's about 4/3. All right, so it came out to be 4/3. So it takes, in this case, it takes a little bit more than one try. Most of the time it's coming out one, but occasionally it takes more. And if you average, the average length ends up being 4/3. If you're doing the baby reproduction thing, it's two. It comes out nice and even. So if it's a 50-50 try, you have to do it on average twice. Now it may take, sometimes it may take 50 tries. That'd be scary. Sometimes you get it on the first try, but on average, it ends up taking two. But it could be actually something fractional. So in this case, it's 4/3. Where does that come from? Oh, okay. That was a rhetorical question, but I'd be happy to hear the answer.
Oh, no, I thought it was from the likelihood of each one of those possibilities.
Yeah.
If there's a 1/3 chance that it will have to be redone.
And so you get the 1 and the 1/3, is that what you're thinking? So that doesn't work for the having a girl trick, okay. Right? Because then it'd be 1.5. That's not quite the explanation we need. Yeah.
There's a 1/4 chance that it needs to be redone. So that's where you get the 4 on top, because it'll have to go through 4, it'll go through 4 different alleyways.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And then you get the 3 on the bottom because there are 3 answers. So you only need to do 3 if you understand.
So what you said, everything you said is correct, but it's somehow not a completely convincing argument. Like, you told me where the numbers come from, but you didn't tell me why that's okay to do. So let me do a little bit of algebra, but don't worry about this too much. But if you're into this sort of thing, it's actually kind of cute the way it works out. So here, we're just going to have a variable. Let's say that on average, it takes x tries. Okay? We want an expression for x. Well, what's going to happen? Well, 3/4 of the time, it takes one try. In the spinner game, right? 3/4 of the time, you either get 0, 1, or 2. But 1/4 of the time, you're going to have to try again. And if you have to try again, how many tries is it going to take before you get a valid answer? Well, we know it's 4/3, but that's cheating. We're not going to use that. Right? So X here stands for the number of tries needed to get 0, 1, or 2. And we're saying that we can write that mathematically. It's going to be the average of 3/4 of the time you get a 1. And you get it on the first try, one repeat. But 1/4 of the time, we have to start again from scratch. And so how long is this going to take? Well, we don't know, but we have a name for it. Right? What goes here? This is 3/4 of the time it's one try, 1/4 of the time it's however many tries it takes to get 0, 1, or 2. Or the number of tries needed to get 0, 1, or 2. The number of tries needed to get 0, 1, or 2. It's not 3. It's x. Right? 3/4 of the time it takes one try, 1/4 of the time it takes whatever x is. We don't know what x is. So we're hosed, right? Right? No, we're not completely hosed. You know how to do this. Algebra was one of the prerequisites. We just have to solve for x, right? We just have to solve for x. X is 3/4 plus 1/4 x. Subtract 1/4 x from both sides. Uh-oh. It's not going to work. I'm going to be wrong. Oh, it's 1. Sorry. It's x plus 1. Sorry. So 3/4 of the time it takes 1. 1/4 of the time we have to flip again. We do one flip. And then after that, we may have to... No, that's not quite right either. All right. Sorry. It's almost as nice as this. How is that? We flip it once, and 3/4 of the time, we're done. And 1/4 of the time, we have to start again from scratch. That's the actual way to create this, sorry. So, we subtract 1/4 x from both sides, we get 3/4 x equals
1, or x equals 4/3. Okay? This works for the having a girl baby, too. So let's try the girl baby in here. So x, well, actually we'll do y. If you're into genetics, you'll see why. Y is, well, you gotta try for, you can't have a girl baby if you haven't had any babies yet. So we're gonna have to try once. After that, there's two possibilities. Half the time we had a girl, so we don't have to do any more than that. And the other half of the time we have to start again from scratch to get a girl. So it's y. So we solve this out, subtract a half y from both sides. No. Try twice, on average. Sometimes it'll be more, sometimes it'll be just once. But on average it's 2. Alright? Anyway, the point is that this equation gives us a reason to believe the empirical results we got by Sacagawea's hard work. It's like first she had to schlep across the country, then she had to flip a coin 1,000 times. Anyway, it's tough work being her. But the point is that we get 4/3, and in general, if we stop with probability p, right? So p is some number between 0 and 1. If each time we do something, we stop with that probability, then how many flips do we need to do? How many repeats do we need to do? We do 1, and then we stop with probability p. So with probability p, we get no more flips. And with probability 1 minus p, we have to start over again, and we get x. So subtract 1 minus p from both sides. We get px equals 1, or x equals 1 over p. So what does that mean? This is the reciprocal. So whatever the probability is, the answer is actually, whatever the probability of stopping is, the answer is the reciprocal of that. So in this case, you stop with probability 3/4, because 3 out of 4 tries, you get the answer you want. The reciprocal of 3/4 is what? 3/4? 4/3, 1 1/3. Right? That's what we got. So take the stopping probability, take 1 over that, take the reciprocal of that, and that tells you how many times it's going to take, how many repeats it's going to take before you get what you're looking for. That was really all I was trying to get at. Any questions or comments on that? That's something I will ask you again. I won't necessarily ask you to rederive it again from the algebra, but it's such an easy fact, right? If the stopping probability is p, then the number of repeats is going to be 1 over that, the reciprocal. It's kind of neat. And these sort of things actually happen. Like in the little coin flip example, like, oh, I don't know. So let's say, let's just do this really fast. Let's say there's this econ class that you have to take. And the probability of passing the class is, say, 90%. So you think, you know, you've got a 90% chance of actually passing at the end. But you have to pass it. So if you fail, you have to take it again. On average, how many times you take that class before you're done? Right? So what's the stopping probability? 90%. So the stopping probability is 90%, or 9 over 10. So how many repeat? How many times do you have to take this class on average to get out? 10 over 9. 1 in the ninth. 1.111111. Okay? So anytime that you have this kind of repeating setting where there's some probability that you'll stop and some probability you have to start it all the way over from scratch, you can get it with the reciprocal. Another thing is, imagine that we're trying to set up dominoes. We're trying to do this little domino. Each time that we're doing it, say that there's only a 1 in 15 chance that we're actually going to be able to set up the whole thing and knock them over. We do all the work, and then they fall, and we have to do it again. How many times on average are we going to have to do this? If it's a 1 in 15 chance that we actually succeed and can stop, then how many times do we actually have to try this before we're done? What's that? Repeat it again. So 1/15 chance that I'll successfully set up the dominoes, and then I can stop. So my stopping probability is 1/15. So it's just 15. Right? If you have 1 over whatever, the reciprocal is just going to be the whatever. So it's going to take me 15 tries to get it done. All right? So I play the Russian roulette, and there's 6 chambers, and I get to stop this game when I... 6 shots. All right, so I didn't convert these to Scratch in the notes, but I did it on the fly, so you get a sense of what that's like. Okay, so now getting at a question that you asked earlier. How do you actually get a computer to give you a random number? And if you were wondering how that could be, I remember the time when I was actually sort of wondering where the little coin was inside the computer. Now, there is no such thing. So actually, what happens here is there's just a weird random, not a random computation, there's a weird computation that just takes numbers and changes them into other numbers. So an example might be something like this. I think we can actually do this. Scrap. So make a random sprite. All right. You just click on this little box and it gives you a sprite from the sprite collection. And this is apparently some anguished dude. All right, so anguished dude is going to be the sprite you're working on. What is it that I was going to do? Oh, we're going to make him spout seemingly random numbers. All right. So this is not a good way to generate random numbers because I'm kind of making it up. People have much, much better ways of doing it. But nevertheless, it'll give you sort of part of the idea. So we start off num to be, I don't know, let's say 37. See, there we go. It's a random number. Okay. What are we going to do with it? We're going to take the random number, take the number that we've got at the moment. We're going to take it and we're going to say square. So we take num and multiply it by itself. And then we're going to add. And we're going to take the whole thing on 2. I'm just making this up. There's very, very much better ways of doing this. And we'll just... Sorry. I'm going to change num to be this weird square plus 11 thing. Then we'll say out loud, num over 2. All right. So here's random dude. He says 0. We click on it again. He says 1. We click on it again. He says 0. 1. 0, 1, 0, 1. All right, this is a horrible random number generator, because what is it doing? It's just alternating back and forth between 0 and 1. That was a bad thing to do. What else can we do? Try 6, and we'll stick a mod in there. This is maybe a bad idea, something to do on the fly. Okay, all right, trying again. Oh, I think I really killed something. I made a very, very big number. That's very scary. So Scratch, turns out Scratch, really robust, doesn't like really, really big numbers. Okay, all right, it's back now. Oh, good, okay, now it's working. He's saying 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. This is another horrible random number generator because it always says 0. That's not what we want. 1, 0, 1, 0, 1. Crap. All right. This is why some people do this for a living. All right, here we go. This is a better one. All right. We're not going to multiply it by itself. We're going to multiply it by this very weird number. There we go. All right, let's see what we get now. 1, 0, 1,
Zero.
Zero.
Crap.
I, you know, it really looked much easier on TV. Zero, one, zero, one, zero.
Damn.
What's that?
He doesn't have a mouth?
No, first mod that you have is a stretch program.
The first mod I have in the stretch, this one here.
Yeah.
You think that's messing it up?
I think so.
I think so. Anyway, well, so the point is that somebody much more clever than me came up with a way of taking numbers and just transform them in a completely deterministic way, but you get this very random looking pattern of numbers coming out. And in fact, it doesn't repeat this pattern, like my pattern repeated every two, right? Zero, one, zero, sorry, zero, one, zero, one. Their pattern repeats every two to the basically 20,000 iterations. So you never see the pattern. You just can't see the pattern. No program will see the pattern. And all the bits are equally likely to be 0 and 1, but completely unpredictable from each other. But it's a completely deterministic process, but nobody looking at it could figure out what's going to happen next. Internally, it's just keeping track of something very simple. But externally, you see this random sequence of bits. It's really, really amazing. And that's how they do it. It's a deterministic process, but it has that kind of unpredictability to it. All right, so next time I will contradict myself.